Geary on October 20th, 2004. We were talking about different jobs involved in a timber mill in the area back when Wallace was working. Okay, were there anything other than those two kind of jobs that were skilled, the sawyer and the planer?
Well, that was the two main jobs, but there's a lot of segments of the same jobs, like when the lumber come off of the head rig, it went on a conveyor, and then it was sorted by the guys on the green chain of what it was, whether it was dimensions or just jacket boards or... So if you worked on the green chain, then you had to see there were several people on the green chain that picked, like one would pull all the tubal cores and put them on a pallet, and the four-quarter stuff on another and so on. So there's several people on the green chain that sorted that lumber. And then once those pallets were piled up to a certain size, and they had to be moved to another place for storage or for getting ready to put it through a planer to finish the product, so they put it on the tracks to allow where they would run it through the dryers, and several processes of it all.
So would people who work at these mills earn a fairly good living?
Oh yeah, for their time. There's some of it, what they call gippo, they do it by the thousand, and others just by the hour, and depends on their arrangement. But if they were gippo and they worked harder and made more money.
But they're just working and turning in board feed. As much as they turn in, they
yeah.
get paid for.
Yeah. Now, like the sawyer, the head man that saw it, I think he worked by the hour, but he was paid probably the top wages of the mill, the sawyer, because he was the one that was the most important job, really. Knowing what to cut out of a log, depending on what it was and how it was, depending on what it would make, you know, out of that number.
Okay, how is this information gathered? These were fairly skilled workers. How did they get the training or education in order to do these jobs?
Like on the green chain, that was just like hard manual labor. And you learned right quick to put the tube of fours in this place and the tube of six in this and so on. Now to be a sawyer, you've got to know a lot more about it, on what a log will cut out, the specie, and what they really want out of a pine log and what they want out of a larch or a tamarack, which is Western talk for a tamarack, is mm-hmm. a larch, or the other way around.
So a lot of the skills and information, just you had to work in
yeah.
logging to pick
yeah.
them up.
Well, at the mill, anyway. The logging is, that's a different ball game too. But you had to be well. When you're logging, you pretty well take everything. So for instance, like there's a lot of white fur in this country, and you didn't take any white fur those days. And now they have realized that's what you see most of is white fur on these trucks. They've learned when we was logging for Reed, he always would have us cut two truck loads of white fur to cover his lumber piles. That's when they hand stack them and air dried them. The reason for that was white fur didn't warp, and white fur wasn't worth anything. So we'd always have us cut two loads of white fur to cover his lumber piles in the fall. And now it's one of the most popular things in the world because it don't warp.
Hmm.
And that's what most of this plywood, a lot of this plywood is made out of. They've realized that white fur is a great product, and it was just waste for years. You just dozed it out of the way and let it lay. But times have changed, for sure.
So, okay, there's other kinds of fur they cut.
Oh, yeah. Red fur.
Red fur?
Yeah, red fur. And that's mainly what grows here. Of course, you've got different kinds of pine, too. Lodgepole, yellow, bull.
Ponderosa.
Yeah, well, that's the name for all of it.
Okay.
Ponderosa.
Okay, now you really learned logging from your family. Growing up, your dad logged.
Well, my dad was, he never did have an outfit, but he was a log cutter and a outstanding saw filer. Everybody in that slope up there brought him saws to sharpen, hand saws and cross cuts and everything. He was well known for his saw sharpening ability.
Okay. Thank you, Wallace. This is October 27th. This is Ron Bram speaking with Wallace Carey. Wallace, we were talking about mills last week, and I noticed from an old paper, an old Elgin Recorder from 1945, that there was a Ponderosa Pine lumber plant in town. You don't, from what you say, you don't know too much about that.
No, I don't. No, because we were logging in here from the Minum to Reed that had the mill, but about the planers and mowers operation and so on. I do remember one thing. I think he gave the stampede ground when they started to build that. I think he gave them the property, but I'm not positive of that.
The Ponderosa?
No, the mower.
Mower?
Yeah.
Oh, that was W.E. Moore.
Maybe.
Okay.
I'm just kind of guessing. I'm not positive of that. But see, even my sister-in-law was a part of the Stampeders. They had a horse club, and she was in that for years and so on.
Did you have anything to do with the Stampeders?
No, I didn't. No, I went to the rodeos a time or two, but that was all.
They started in the 40s, didn't they?
I think, probably.
Mm-hmm. Okay, what was it like living in a logging camp? You said you spent most of your time living in the logging camp rather than in Elgin. What was it like? What was life like there in a logging camp?
Well, it was right back to old Mother Nature itself. We were when we was on the Minim to start with, we had we built a log barn for the horses. I had two teams, and then our cookhouse was a trailer house that we moved in there, and then my dad built a bunkhouse for the men to sleep in, and we had six, seven, eight men, and my sister-in-law at start with was the cook for that, and of course he's right on the head of got what creek, but we had running water right in the creek there that was good, that we could cook with and wash our faces and so on, you know. And we had we did make a shower room, but all that didn't last but probably 2 years up there, and then we moved back down on the river, and we had my brother and his wife had a trailer house over across the river, and we had our camp was kind of divided. The river divided us, and we had a light plant on our cookhouse side, and then a bunkhouse, and had a cook, and she cooked for a time six men. And other times they would just, some of the men would move their families out there and stay in the tent when the school was out, you know. And,
how many of the men actually lived in town or had their families in town?
Oh, that's a give and take, you know, several. Some of them would drive and some of them would camp out there, but the people that camped there, and family people, where they'd just be in tents in the summer, and then they'd move back to town for school, which is, four or five of them sometimes. It was pretty lean pickings those days, you know. Wages were, tops of about 2.5 an hour. And that don't sound like much money nowadays, but it bought a lot more than it does now, you know. But I like when the Rasmussen would shoe horses, I don't remember what they charged us.
So how many different kinds of things, like the Rasmussens had a blacksmith shop in Elgin.
Yeah.
How many things did you handle out at the camps? Horseshoeing, fixing equipment, stuff like that. Did you have a forge there to where?
No, we didn't in camp. No, anything that particular, we just bring it in, like sharpening our tongs and PV barbs and so on, they would do it in here. The Rasmussens would sharpen those because they had forges and understood tempering metal, you know. If you don't do it right, you either get it too hard and it breaks, or it's too soft and it bends. So you got to know what you're doing, you know. And we didn't.
Okay. Was this fairly typical that basically a tent camp with some buildings would be set up for logging operations?
Oh, in those days, yeah. There was a lot of camps out. And, transportation just wasn't that easy those days, you know. You'd go out there and spend the week and then come home for the weekend. It was typical.
How did you get out there? By horseback or car?
Oh, we had a car.
You had a car.
Old pickup, yeah. And of course we had our trucks, which were all right in those days, you know, and that would be wives of some of the drivers was so on that would ride in and get groceries, and they'd use the trucks as transportation too, you know, in amongst the crew.
Was it pretty common for the women and to help out like that, to do those kind of jobs?
Oh yeah.
While the men were off logging.
Yeah, they would. One man we had, his wife was the cook out there, and he drove truck. And so even he would pinch hit at getting groceries and so on too, you know. She'd send in an order of groceries, and he would bring it back on the truck to save the trip in.
Were you married at this time?
I got married. I think the most of that I wasn't married. And later, this gal here, I married her along in that time someplace, because I know we rode horses up to the horse ranch there up to Minum. We each rode a horse up there and back, and we come back in the night, and it was just pitch dark, but the horses could, they knew the trail, and we were right up above the river, you know, and a lot of those places, it'd be pretty spooky if they couldn't have seen, you know, but they were sure-footed. We just let them have their reins to pick their own way, and they brought us out of there.
Okay, you went in there with your wife. Was that around the time you did some work out at Red's Horse Ranch?
Yeah, that was the only reason we was up there. My older brother was the one that did the work up there. We had a cat and a can, and what the main purpose of that trip up there was, the runway was too short for the modern airplanes at that time. Of course, at this time, you couldn't even land in it. Well, those bush pilots could probably. But that was the reason for the cat in the can. He extended the runway about 200 feet to give him a chance to land in there.
Do you know how old the original runway was?
No.
How big it was?
No, I don't know how long it was, no.
Do you know what kind of planes they flew in there?
No, I don't even know that. I know I rode with them, because the job lasted longer than they expected, and we had 17 barrels of diesel in there, but on the way up, we lost two barrels of it, jostling around over the rocks and so on, going up the river, poked a hole in two of the barrels, so we lost about 100 gallon of fuel. Well, then when we got near the end, then I got a plane out of Le Grand, and we could haul about 35 gallon, I believe it was, of fuel, and him and I, because I had to go with him to show him how to get in there. So we made two trips by flying the fuel in there. That got pretty expensive, but it did finish the job.
Okay, but how long did you stay with the job? A couple months?
Oh, no, it wasn't that well. 3 weeks or a month.
Three weeks.
At the most.
Okay, what was Red's Horse Ranch like at that time?
Well, it was comfortable, and he, I don't know. Did you know much about Red?
No, I know a little bit, not very much.
He was a retired fireman out of Portland, and he bought that thing as just an outing for the guys he knew, because it was a good hunting camp and so on. Red Higgins was his name, big red-headed guy. But he was one that developed that into more of a resort than it was previous.
Did he live there?
Well, only in during the recreation season. He wasn't there in the wintertime. But it was a hunting camp as well as a fishing camp.
Now, you said, I think you said before, he bought it from someone else?
Yeah, and I could, yeah. But I don't know who. We weren't the first cat in there either. Ours was bigger, more modern, but the guy that first went up that river with a cat was a old Caterpillar 30 with a wagon load of lumber that he built a bridge across the Little Minum, which is still there, I imagine. See, the Minum River divided. The Little Minum come in from the east, kind of, and they couldn't cross it very good. And years before we did this, why he went up there with an old 30 cat and a wagon load of lumber and built that bridge up there. And it was still there when we were there. But it crossed the Little Minum, not the main one.
Okay, so Red bought this. Do you know what other improvements that Red made? Because this got to be a pretty well-known spot.
No, I was never there after that. After that, and our job was building the airport, and I know that made it possible for other planes to come in, bigger planes that they had those days. And I know that it's been an active thing, but I never knew anything about it, and I never was back there. So I don't know what happened since 45.
Okay. Were you a hunter yourself?
Huh?
Were you a hunter yourself?
No.
You didn't do hunting?
No, I'm not. I killed game, but I wasn't a hunter. I never went out hunting as a camp or anything. I just hunted from our Logan camp wherever, but I never did hunt much. I remember getting the big elk out here on the Palmer Valley, up on the mountains, up from Palmer Valley. I got a bull elk up there one time. Got another one out in the Hoodoo country once. But I never was. I was always too lazy to put out the effort, to tell you the truth.
How did things get taken care of? People at Red, there were buildings that people slept in?
Oh yeah, I think he built that up into quite a resort, and he was a retired fireman out of Portland, so he had a lot of, I'd say, city folks that liked that kind of a thing, to get away from it all, you know, and I think that's where his business mainly was catering to the city people out of Portland that he knew.
Okay, so this wasn't as rough as a lumber camp?
Oh no. No, it was pretty, probably like not a modern house here, but a lot of log buildings, and he had fenced in pastures with horses that they rode, and it was quite an outing for people that had never experienced it.
Okay, back to the lumber camp experience. How did they take care of things? Like cooking, they might build a cookhouse.
In the In the logging camp?
In the logging camps you were in.
We did. We had a cookhouse.
And how about bathrooms?
Just outside Bravies. Yeah.
Well, the outhouses, they call
them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, there was no bath facilities unless you heated up your water on the stove and took a sponge bath, you know. But generally, everybody would come home for a weekend, you know, and have their own family home.
Okay, did you stay up there over the weekend?
Oh, yeah. Well, give and take, yeah. Sometimes, no. Most of the time, not, because I was married to this gal, and she had a ranch out north of Enterprise, so I had jobs waiting for me a weekend out there. So.
Okay. The Rasmussen blacksmith shop in Elgin, you mentioned you brought horses in. How did you get your horses into town? How did that whole operation work for you?
I had them. We hauled them. That was a crazy sight. I had a one-ton Jimmy stake rack, and I'd put them two big horses on that, and they was way above the cab. And I'd haul them in there. But there was horses going down the road that was way above the rack, and I don't know why I didn't end up wrecking or killing some horses, but I never did. But they were used to traveling. You didn't sway too much on the highway or whatever, you know, so they'd lose their balance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they'd stay right there, and I'd haul them clear out the ranch at the times we wouldn't use them. We didn't have the greatest outfit, I'll tell you.
This was a Gippo outfit?
Yeah, that's what we were. Logging Gippos.
Do you remember when that name came in? Or was that here before you were?
Yeah, that was. Yeah, my dad was a log cutter, and I heard that Gippo name ever since I was born, though I wouldn't know.
So, now the Rasmussens, what do you know about their business here in Elgin?
Well, I know they were prominent, but they were Danes from Denmark. They talk English good, but they also talk broken. But they were well thought of, and I think their heirs are still around here, probably.
Okay, and where was their shop?
Right across from, you know where the Standard Station is on the corner?
Mm-hmm.
It was just, you might say, to the end of that. That station wasn't there at that time. But it was almost across from that new city police building. I'm glad you shut that off, because you didn't need to hear that gossip.
Okay, this was Albert and Nels Rasmussen?
Yeah.
They're two names.
Yeah, Nels was the older one, smaller man, and what was the other one?
Albert.
Albert, yeah. He was a real stocky muscle guy. We had one horse that didn't like to be shoed, but he had a way with horses. And you take a 1,600-pound logging horse that's kind of ornery, you got to know how to handle them.
What kind of horses were these?
They were Percherons.
Percherons?
Yeah.
A pretty big animal.
Yeah, they were full brothers, that team was. And one weighed 1590 and the other 1610. They were full brothers. Perfect match. Golly, they were beautiful horses. Black, blazed face. I got some pictures someplace. I guess I have.
These were your horses when you...
Yeah. Yeah, at that time we had two teams and one cat. We had a D7 cat.
Okay. Was this a pretty normal size operation for
no.
a Gippo outfit, or was it small? Or
it was small. But I guess at that time everybody was small, though. Yeah, that was before the line machines and all the stuff they do nowadays that I don't even know how to work. You know, the trimmers, automatic fullers and the trimmers and all that. I'm way back behind all that now. But that's the very thing that broke my brother. He was older than I was, but he had to have all that equipment, and now he's gone, and they're piled up out there in a junk pile. But the equipment broke him. He just had to have the best and most. I didn't live like that. I wanted to pay for what I got.
Was it hard to, like, increase the size of your operation doing what you and your brother did? You said your brother chose to get more equipment.
Yeah, and after so long, there was no end to his desires. He had to have the biggest and the best all the time. And I finally said, forget it. So I went my own way.
How did he finance these? What was the means of someone financing an operation like this?
The banks just loved him.
The banks loved him, okay.
Because he paid him more interest than anybody in the world. If you're going to be the biggest fish in the pool, why, you got to be fed like it. But that's where we was different. He had to have the biggest and the best, and he was always paying for it. I wanted a piece of equipment and pay for it and think about another one if I had to have it. So we just parted, that's all.
Okay, were there many people like your brother who managed to make a go of that?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there were different loggers around the area. You
yeah.
certainly weren't alone.
Yeah, same. You got a variety of whatever. Some made it and some didn't, you know. But it was just a matter of management. There was a guy by the name of Paul Doherty. It was highball. And he made it. Until he got too big, and then the booze got him. And then his management went to hell, and so did his outfit, but at one time he was a real operator. I don't know, just typical human beings. Everybody go a different direction, you know. And who's right, I don't know, but I was married last to the right woman, too, because she thought just like I did, and that's why we loved each other and got places. And we had some pretty big things go on in our lives, not logging. She was let's clear off the subject. But
okay, we don't have to go into just personal things. What other businesses, like the Rasmussen's Blacksmith Shop, what other businesses here service the loggers?
Well, my brother built a shop where the new blacksmith or the new hardware store is here in town.
Mm-hmm.
He built that shop, and that was his repair shop here. And he had a guy that was a good mechanic and run it, and he eventually bought it from Clifford, and then Clifford built another shop out to the ranch there. But Horace Van Dusen was his name, and he was a He was a good operator. I think he did well.
Was this the shop that later became Shorts?
Yeah, yeah.
Just off of Highway 82?
Yeah, right, just right at the end of town there.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a block building, and they, Short had it, and then he sold it, and they put a hardware store in there. And it's a real nice place now.
Okay, what did your brother have done there? Did he repair his own equipment?
Yeah, and he finally sold it to Forrest, and then he did mechanical work for other people then.
Okay, were there other businesses like that that started to serve, you know, mechanical needs or horses or...
You know, right here in town, I don't think I can tell you. Because, you see, I had a 43-year gap there that I wasn't here, and a lot of stuff went on that I didn't even know about.
Between 1960 and 2003?
Yeah.
Okay, back during the time you do know about, there weren't any other... weren't too many other places like that in town.
No. I remember the blacksmith shop real well, and there's one guy that had that service station that's shut down right now, just beyond the Standard Station. And before you get to O&M, there's an old station right there. Now, he was quite a mechanic. Had a small place, but he was a good man. He did quite a bit of repair work. You know, I can't even tell you his name. But he had it going pretty good for a while. But I can't think of any other big shops.
What did men do for socialization when they came into town during this time?
Three bars along that main street that raised all kinds of hell.
Do you remember their names?
Oh, I remember some. Paul Doherty was a logging gypo that he liked to get his snoot wet, and he got pretty tough. I was down at the bar one night, and he was showing off. But I did a little drinking, but not ever very much. And he was shadow boxing around me and telling me how tough he was. And pretty soon I just grabbed him and set him up on the bar. And that embarrassed the hell out of him. I remember that little ordeal. And they sure give him the raspberry.
But did Elgin have a reputation then?
Oh.
For being a tough town?
I guess so. There were some guys in it that thought they were tough. I never was bothered too much. But I just pulled a few little capers like that, and I didn't get a kick out of thumping on anybody, really, you know, and I didn't pick a fight or nothing. There was a few guys in every place, and when you get a little booze under your belt, well, you get twice as tough, you know. But it don't work that way.
Okay. What was the effect in Elgin of servicemen coming back? You came to Elgin in 45. Do you know much of that history? Servicemen coming back from the service?
At that time, it was Enterprise. See, we didn't move out here until 45, and I got back in 40. guess I got back and I got back in 45. November of 45. Then we moved out to Elgin, I guess, the next year. But then that's when we was on the Minim.
Okay, so you didn't see much of that servicemen coming back from the war?
Well, I don't see. We were on the lower slope up there, and I knew quite a lot of people that were in the service, but I guess I kind of went and come back alone on the train. You know, there was about 35 of us that had to go to examination in Spokane before they drafted me. But then in about 42, there was no jobs opened up yet here in this country. My brother and I went to Central Oregon looking for a log cutting job, and we found it over there. And because I left Locale, I was the first one 20 years old that was drafted. The rest of them were 35 or over, and I was the only one in that draft that was 20 years old.
Okay, back in the, you left here in 1960, what was the economic situation here then in Elgin?
It was going downhill. The main thing that affected the whole country was when Bates went down in Wallow. They had the big mill in Wallow, and then J. Herbert built a big mill down here in Looking Glass. And things were going great. We had our own private road and 10-foot bunks and all this. There's the biggest load I ever put on my truck. 13,640 feet, 10-foot bunks. Well, anyway, J. Herbert was one that built a new mill down here at Looking Glass. At the Grand Round, and he built a brand new mill, and it run less than 2 years. And they, bunch of idiots there in Wallow, decided that they'd strike J. Herbert if he didn't pay more money, and everybody was doing good. And my brother was up to the meeting, and he said, the price of lumber and so on doesn't justify a raise. And if you strike, I'll shut it down. That's exactly what happened. That brand new mill run less than 2 years right down here at Looking Glass. And of course we lost our job. And we had things really going good. It was private road seat, 10-foot bunks. There was no tax, no road tax, no license, no nothing. We hauled out of the hoodoo country and hauled anywhere from 10,000 to 14,000 board feet of load. Doing great. And when those idiots struck, we had just closed everything down.
And the whole area really suffered from that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's brothers that hate brothers yet right there in the town of Wallow. You know, a certain bunch of rabble-rousers gonna push somebody around, you know, and they didn't didn't work. So that's when we went elsewhere trying to make a living. I went to Colorado, Clifford went to Montana. Bad news, but the country never will recover over that. I won't, anyway. And a lot of people around me is the same way.
Okay, were there other people in Elgin that probably left at the same time because of the cutback in the timber money?
I'm sure.
Do you know any specific stories?
Well, it's still here. I'm not sure I can name anybody. Hazelwoods, they're gone. Well, both of them are dead now, in fact. Are you acquainted here in Elgin very much?
A little bit, not a whole lot.
Well, this George Krauser was my driver, and he's the father of the guy that's got the insurance agent down here.
Bob?
Yeah. This is his dad.
Oh, okay.
I gave him a picture like this, and he's got it in display down there. I gave it to my stepson that's over in Soton, and he took it to the truck and outfit, and boy, they grabbed it, and it's on display over the post. That's quite a thing. That's a lot of wood on one truck.
Okay. Now, do you know anything about what... You didn't come into town very much for entertainment or anything while you were logging. Did other loggers come into Elgin for entertainment?
No, just drunken bums on the road down there. So
just
I
drunk.
There never was any big entertainment here. The theater has always been there, but how active it's ever been, I couldn't even tell you.
Okay. How about the Grange? The Grange Hall?
No, I think that's pretty active, and always have been, I think.
The Rockwall Grange.
Yeah. That, and I think it still holds up. I think that's pretty active. I think there's a lot of good folks there. And they have like fiddler contest, and that's one thing I could mention, that before my wife got so sick, we went out to a fiddler entertainment one night, and I will always remember that. And there were some people playing fiddles there that I knew from way back. So I think that's one thing that stays pretty active.
Was that pretty active when you, in the 50s and...
I didn't even know about it.
You didn't even know about it then.
You see, I wasn't... This is just the stopping place, you know. I was out in the brush one place or another, and a heck of a lot I didn't know about. I didn't enter the booze circuit much or anything, and I never did get drunk. It wasn't my bag.
What do you know about the railroads being used in logging operations?
Yeah, before, here. You see, it was real active when my brother got the job from Bates, which the mill was at Wallow.
Mm-hmm.
And before they built this mill, we logged into the tracks there at Looking Glass and shipped the logs by rail to Wallow. And there was so much timber back in the Looking Glass country and the Hoodoo country and so on that he eventually decided to put a mill in down here.
Looking Glass?
Yeah. Well, it's on the Grand Round, but it's just beyond the Looking Glass Creek there. But that went on for, we probably logged for Bates, at least 2 years before the mill was put in there. And it was reloaded and shipped by rail up to Wau. Because he had a big holding out in the Looking Glass area in the Hoodoo country back there of timber.
Do you know, did he put the railroad in?
Oh, no.
No,
oh,
that no. was there before.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the railroad was, it was put in way back, about 1907. That was put into Wau County in about 1907. We went on that. My kids gathered around and bought my ticket. We all went on that cruise here a while back.
Mm-hmm.
And one of my sons, is a glassblower in Enterprise. Sorry to get off the subject, but...
Okay, I want to get back, because we don't have too much more tape.
Yeah.
The railroads, were there spurs built by different operations
yeah.
around Union County, particularly?
Well, I know the one that... Looking Glass, and I'm sure there's one at Roundel, which is the conversion of the Wau and the Grand Round. I think there's a spur. I'm sure there's a spur there.
Were most of these spurs built for logging purposes?
No. Other than that one main one, and maybe the one at Randall that was made, the rest of them was for cattle.
For cattle.
Yeah,
okay.
You see, they shipped almost for 40, 50 years, they shipped all the cattle by rail to Portland. In fact, I rode the freighters there. They would assign you a car as they'd ship, you know, there'd be 50 cars maybe of cattle or hogs. Or both, and they had the railroaders responsible for the welfare of those animals till they got there. So they would sign some young guy like me and my friend a certain car. So when they stopped, well, you had to go check your animals out to see if any of them were down or anything. So they made it to market. At Portland without problems. And that was a big thing back when I was a kid, was the railroad. There was a stop shoot along everybody's farm that shipped either cattle or hogs out of the Wau County on that rail.
Oh, okay. So along the rail, they would just stop at a ranch and collect animals.
They would... They wouldn't do it on the main line, but they would be, you might call it engine jockey, that would gather up stuff during the week until the main line come in. And they would have loading places like at Evans, that's near Lostine, and Wau and Enterprise and Joseph, or certain other big stock centers. They would bring them into those chutes and they'd load those cars up ready.
But they do this as it goes up north of Minum.
Yeah.
Yeah, up Randawa. There's a spur line there.
Yeah. Well, it follows the river, see. The railroad mm-hmm. follows the river, clear up into Joseph.
Okay. Do you know who was running the railroad then?
UP is all I know.
Okay. I can't think of anything else. Do you know any? Did you know anybody that worked on the railroad at that time, from around here?
I had a brother-in-law that worked on the railroad in LeGrand for all of his life, but not on the branch. I don't think I can tell you. anybody.
Okay. Thank you, Wallace.